Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and we begin this Thursday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sometimes I wonder why I say that. It's not like you guys don't know, but you never know when there's going to be a noob out there just finding us for the first time. And we say that with great love in our hearts because we were all noobs once upon a time, weren't we? I'm a noob, as you're a noob, as we're a noob, and we are noobs together. You know, Hootie Weed or Cuckoo Ca-Choo or whatever. It is Thursday, and I'm happy to say it's Thursday because Thursday always means that we get a new edition of the Green News Report from our dear friends Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And this should be a dandy insofar as it's Earth Day. And Earth Day, it's not just Earth Day. It's the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. That's right. Earth Day began in 1970. 1970. Yes, yes, yes. I remember it well. You know, this may just sound crazy, but I do. I remember Earth Day well because I was all of 7 years old, and I had a brand new, I was in first grade, I had a shiny new purple bicycle. Oh, that thing was the joy of my existence. Had a banana seat that was all sparkly, and I mean, this thing was purple. Everything on it was purple. Purple was my favorite color. Still is in many ways. And it was a beautiful, beautiful spring morning in northwest Alabama. The elementary school was one, two, three and a half blocks away. And I got to ride the bicycle to school that day. And it was a simpler time, it was a sweeter time, it was a more trusting time, and I parked my bicycle in the bicycle rack there. Schools had bicycle racks because it was in a neighborhood. Parked my bicycle and went to class. That would have been Mrs. Landers, first grade. Yeah. And it got stolen. My beloved bicycle was stolen on the very first Earth Day in American history. And so that's how I remember Earth Day. Oh, such a prosaic existence. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But anyway, it's the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, and I look for a great green news report out of Brad and Desi. They do not disappoint. Never have mailed one in yet. Some of the snarkiest EnviroSnark that there is available on the series of tubes where, you know, you push the button here and it just goes there. It doesn't go just there? No. Well, where does it go? You mean you push the button and it doesn't go there? Our vaunted Supreme Court. I've got a Supreme Court story in the stack tonight. Or kind of a, not really a Supreme Court story, but one of those law of unintended consequences stories arising from the story we talked about the other night with the First Amendment being protected by Roberts and Thomas and Scalia and Kennedy and Ginsburg and Breyer and Stevens. Did I miss any? It was 8-1. I got a story about that in the stacks, and, well, we're going to get to it. There's a hint. But as I noted in the show post for this evening, I have to tell you, it's a little it's a little frustrating sometimes trying to pull this show together, especially now that we've compartmentalized things and we have certain things that happen on certain days. You know, Friday on the front porch, which will happen tomorrow, is kind of laid back and fun, and we save silly stuff for it unless you're burned up and I'm burned up, and then it's not so silly. We save Wednesdays for prayer meeting when we have nice religious lunacy stories to share. And fast becoming one of the most popular evenings of the week is Moran Monday. We have given the right wing an entire evening in which to display for all and sundry just what a stupid bunch of jackasses they are. The whole night, nothing but right-wing jackasses, and it's all theirs. Is that good enough for them? Oh, hell no! Let's see, what did Mike Vanderbooger Eater say the other day? When the Southerner says, oh, hell no, that means somebody's going to get shot or stabbed? Well, I just said, oh, hell no, and not, trust me, I'm not stabbing or shooting anybody, so it'll be okay. But no, we give them their, and still, the morons just keep piling up. But it's like junk mail. It's like spam, and you've got no filter, and it just comes at you, comes at you, comes at you, comes at you. And tonight is no different. Tonight, well, I got to tell you, when I was first made aware of this clip, this video, and I saw the name Sue Loudon, even though Garrett, calling from Vegas, had mentioned her on a number of occasions, you know, there's been kind of a Betty White renaissance in this country of late, what with the Snickers commercial and a few years back with Lake Placid, which was just a delight. And Betty White is a comic genius. On a par, I would say, any day of the week, Betty White is a comic genius every bit as much as Gracie Allen, you know, George Burns' beloved wife was, and comedy partner, was a genius. And when I originally saw Sue Loudon, the first thing I thought was, what? Betty White has it? Because if you'll recall, during the run of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Betty White played Sue Ann Niven, you know, the happy homemaker there at whatever the name of the station was, and I'll get email about the name of the station. And she was sort of catty and wacky and mean and evil and just, yeah, hated Mary. And so when I originally saw Sue Loudon's health care plan, I thought, what? Sue Ann Niven's health care plan? Oh, this can't be good. And you know what? In the long run, it probably isn't much different than a health care plan that Sue Ann Niven would put forward, really. But I opened it, and there it was, Moran Monday nominee for the Thursday evening show. But you know how pushy and diva-like these right-wingers are. You can't tell them to wait their turn. Oh, no, no, no. No, they must have it right then when they want it. So, you know, just as the background, or if you don't know already, Sue Loudon is, what was the term that Don Henley coined in that masterful song, The Dirty Laundry? The bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry. Well, Sue Loudon is that quintessential bubble-headed bleach blonde. She is, in fact, a former talking head. I don't mean, you know, reporter. No, she sat behind a desk and, well, Jim, let's talk, you know. Only she's not that anymore. She quit the news gig and got herself a job as some sort of corporate candy for a gambling outfit. And somewhere along the way, somebody pulled her aside and said, listen, sweetheart, you know what you want to be? You know how it is. Somebody out in Vegas, you know what you need to be? You need to be a U.S. senator. Because, you know, us gambling consigns out here, we ain't got quite enough representation. And that flipping Mormon over there, the guy with the magic underwear, Harry Reid, we can't get nothing from him. Yeah, actually, we get something from him, but we don't get nearly as much as we want. He won't let us go and take out kneecaps like in the old days. In the olden days, it was so much easier. So Sue Loudon, sweetheart, honey, you know, bada boom, bada bing, bada boom. Hey, we got it. You know, we want to make you a senator. Because, you know, Sue Ann, you're genius. You are a genius. Without a doubt. Smart. Really smart. And great games, too. And Sue Ann Loudon said, you just know she's Sue Ann, don't you? Sue Loudon said,
me? I don't know. I've been feeling a little wrinkly up here, and I've noticed some...
Don't worry about that, honey. We'll get you some Botox. Hey! Hey, Paulie the Needle! Take her over and do the Botox on Sue here. Because, honest to God, when I saw the video of this woman, her skin is stretched tighter across her face than Tutankhamun's after they unwrapped. I mean, if she tried to raise her eyebrows, she'd rip her pantyhose. Ooh, that's catty. That's Sue Ann. That's worthy of Sue Ann Niven. That really is. But she sat down the other day and explained that, you know, the health care bill that we've got that might save the lives of 45,000 Americans, you know, it's not her cup of tea. She's got a better plan. No, she really does, and I have the audio of it right here. Listen at your peril, and just thank God you're not seeing the video.
You know, before we all started having health care in the olden days, our grandparents, they would bring a chicken to the doctor. They would say, I'll paint your house. They would do, I mean, that's the old days of what people would do to get health care with their doctors. Doctors are very sympathetic people. I'm not backing down from that system.
I have doctors.
Just bring a chicken to the doctor. 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 I'm not backing down from that. Bring a chicken to the doctor. Bring a chicken to the doctor. Bring a chicken to the doctor. I'm not backing down from that. Let's change the system and talk about what the possibilities are. Bring a chicken to the doctor. Bring a chicken to the doctor. Bring a chicken to the doctor. I'm not backing down from that.
Yeah, no kidding. Bring a chicken to the doctor. So let's say you've just had...
Bartering is really good. Those doctors who you pay cash, you can barter. And that would get prices down in a hurry. And I would say go ahead out and pay cash for whatever your medical needs are. And go ahead and barter with your doctor.
Yeah, go barter. Go barter with your doctor. Do that. Do that and see how that, tell me how that works out. Because I'm trying to figure here, I went out just out of a sense of morbid curiosity. I went up to the grocery store today, up to Crude Food. And when I went up to the grocery store, I just happened to stop and look at the chickens. And, you know, this, now bear in mind, I'm sure they come cheaper if they're not plucked and not dead yet, but a dead plucked chicken with the little package of innards down in the empty hollow cavity. It was going for about $3. It was going for about $3. So, let's say you have to have a CT scan. And let's say that CT scan runs you $1,000. You're gonna be bringing about 333 chickens to the hospital. Hey, Doc, where you want the chickens? I wish it. This is, it's, well, you know what it reminded me of? This is a favorite, and we're coming up on our anniversary. It'll be 17 years here very soon. One of Agnes and I, we started watching this together early on in our courtship and our relationship. A charming little film with Michael J. Fox in it called Doc Hollywood, about an aspiring young plastic surgeon who wants to work in Hollywood and gets stuck in a small South Carolina town called Grady, the squash capital of the South. And there was this scene in it, and I showed Agnes the chicken video last night, and she said, "Give me the laptop, Bob." What do you want? What do you want? You know, I'm as possessive of the laptop as most people, as most guys are of the clicker. But I handed her the laptop because I know not to fight the wars I can't win, or the battles at least. And lo and behold, genius that she is, Agnes found this.
Hello, Mr. Packer. All right. Okay, let's get something straight right now, okay? I got 8 years of higher education. I got 1 year of internship. I got 1 year of residency. I'm $70,000 in debt. Now I'm waylaid in this hee-haw hell, and you insist on clocking me in and out like some kind of factory worker? Well, no! No! This is where I draw the line.
I believe you have a visitor, Doctor.
Doc, my foot feels so good, I brought you this pig.
Okay.
I can't abide being in no man's den. This pig's all I got to give.
I'm already paid, more or less, by the hospital. I really can't accept your pig.
It's a done deal. She's your pig now. God bless you both.
Keep your animal outside. This is a hospital.
Yes, it is. Love that film. And I hate the fact that it's trying to become an American reality. Oh, my God. The Republicans want to reduce us to a barter system in which we swap swine for treatment for our swine flu. Chickens for our bird flu. Jeebus! What's wrong with that woman, Sue Loudon? She's got a 10-point lead on Harry Reid. Now, Harry's not my favorite guy, but he hasn't come out and suggested that I need to take Atticus Finch a bag of hickory nuts for working on my entailment. This is... I find myself time after time after time on this program with golden evening light coming through the southern exposed windows of our studio, and it's beautiful. No, it's not beautiful. It's a mess in here. But I find myself looking up and all this equipment that surrounds me, computers and calls from all over the world, and this amazing, amazing technology we have. And I find myself looking at the world that the right wing wants to create and just putting my hands over my head as if it was Excedrin headache number 1726.9378 and screaming, "This is the 21st century! This is 2010! And a woman from Nevada who wants to be a senator of the United States of America wants doctors to get paid in chickens. Yes, yes, Sue Loudon, there was a time when doctors got paid in chickens, but have you considered the remedies that they were offering then? What you need here is a good dose of Dr. Feelgood's Liniment. take two swallers of this and go to bed, and if you ain't dead in the morning, come back and get two swallers more, and don't forget the damn second chicken, we're having guests Sunday. Jesus. Morons. Chickens? Really? Chickens. I could cry. And chicken medicine. Chicken medicine is 10 points ahead of Harry Reid. Yeah, and Marty asks, you know, what if the doc is a vegetarian or a vegan? Chicken-shaped tofu? A tofurkey? Oh, this is crazy-making. Really, honest to God, it is the 21st century. I could scream. I think I just did. Michael writes from California and says, go into the dentist with a toothache. See who has the bargaining position. You barter with cash. Marty also saying, I'll have you know that it's difficult to switch to you from KUDO and Shannon Moore. Shannon's show is over, but the next show is Beer 101. Let's go together, Marty! And it, well, you know, you might want to go to Beer 101 because it's not going to get any better. It just isn't. You know, really, tell me, are the voters of Nevada that clueless? I mean, there's got to be a few 21st century sophisticates in that state who realize that, Jesus, you couldn't even get a shot of penicillin from what you get from one of the Vegas hookers for a chicken. I mean, that'd be at least a slab, a slab of bacon. Even a standing rib roast wouldn't buy you much. This is the inflated medical system that the insurance companies have created. And wait till the insurance companies get wind of this. Oh, they're not going to be happy with Sue Loudon. By the way, Sue Loudon has not volunteered to take her senatorial pay in chickens. You know, penguins. Penguins are practically chickens. And I hate to see a penguin cry. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up, Susan?
Well, are you belted in?
You know, at this point, I'm hanging like a bat from the ceiling.
Well, I did a little checking.
Chicken checking?
No.
Oh.
This is about the Arizona law, the immigration law.
Yeah.
By the way, Arizona is planning on, has a birther bill in the works just like Nevada.
I thought it already passed.
No, that was in Nevada.
No, the Arizona one passed, I too. At least what I've been reading.
Oh, and well, it may have. Anyway, what I'm calling is about the horrendous immigration bill. And the mainstream news has been going on and saying, this is the most restrictive immigration bill ever done. Well, not really. In 2007, in Prince George's County, Virginia, a whole bunch of fundies got together and took over the city council, the county council, and said, we don't like them Mexicans. And they basically put in the same thing. And it passed. Would you care to find out the law, what happened in the way of unintended consequences of that law?
Oh, do please.
Actually, it's going to be funny. People in Arizona, pay attention. This is coming at you. The first thing that happened was, of course, the police started hassling anybody with brown skin.
Natch.
The people with brown skin said, we're not putting up with this crap.
Papers? We don't need no stinking papers.
So they said, we're going to vote with our feet, and they moved. Now, 99% of these people were legal citizens, naturalized, or, you know, people like me who were born here. But they weren't going to put up with being hassled, so they just don't move. The first realization that the WASP community had that there was something dreadfully wrong was that all of these small groceries and other types of stores, hardware stores and stuff, start going out of business.
Good.
Because they were serving low-end people like immigrants and working people.
Now, is this Prince George's County, Maryland, or Prince George's County, Virginia?
Virginia. No, it's Prince William County. Sorry.
Prince William County. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so all these stores start going out of business because all of their customers left. Then there was all these slumlords suddenly lost huge amounts of money because the houses they had been renting to these people
went all empty.
The people who had owned their houses, they up and sold them and left. Then it got worse. Malls started going empty and going bankrupt. I mean, this got really bad. By the time 2009 rolled around, the very same people who before were screaming, you know, we can't have this flood of horrible people, and to enact this law, they were back screaming, repeal this law, it's killing us. They still haven't recovered economically.
Did they repeal it?
Well, eventually, yeah.
I guess, you know, but I guess Arizona feels like that it's a little bit insulated because it's you know, there by the border with Mexico. So they figure there will always be people of a darker skin tone to harass. Because this isn't, you know, this isn't business based. As you've obviously pointed out, Susan, this is bad for business. This is stupid business. This is anti-business.
Yeah, they figure.
But what they're doing, what
the, take a 29%, $29 billion hit. If this is enacted in.
But see, there's one problem here. For the freaks in the Arizona legislature that are running this stuff past, economics mean nothing in the grand scheme of their teabagging bigotry.
Nope.
They are bigots. They get. I'm not kidding. I will defer, of course, always to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, but they get a sexual charge out of this bigotry. I mean, this is stuff that operates way deep inside their lizard brains.
Did you see that Colbert Report video about this?
I did not.
Okay, I picked it up off of a raw story. Colbert, you know, in his The Word segment, he comes right out and says, hassling Hispanics isn't a side effect of this bill. It's the whole point.
Precisely.
Yeah. And they're going to pay. They will pay, just like that county in Virginia did.
Well, I don't necessarily know, because Virginia does not have a common border with Mexico.
Yeah, but the thing is, Arizona has a common border with other states that also have a common border with Mexico. So the word will probably go out, hey, you want to cross the border, do it down here. Or else they will come in to Arizona and then boogie either east or west and not stick around.
Well, you know, if the Arizona... I've been transformed into a skeptic, Susan.
Yeah, I realize that.
I don't know if anything will wake the, because nothing wakes a bigot up. They are brain dead.
Yeah, they're totally, you know, their brain is running on this one track and it's dug so deep, they're not getting out and they don't want to get out. They're like hamsters on their wheels, you know, they're perfectly happy running around and round circle. And,
well, it's kind of a zigzag, and it's in the shape of a swastika, but apart from that, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with you. it just, there's incredible stupidity, and never fails to amaze me. I just sit there in awe, and I go, God, Darwin was right.
Yeah, but when's the natural selection going to catch up with them? I mean, when are they going to put on the Wile E. Coyote rocket skates and find the instant hole and you know?
Good question. I really wish I knew. I really wish I knew.
We can only hope and wait.
Did you, on one other point, what did you think of that article I sent you about the little girl?
The one in Mexico?
Yes.
You know, I've got it in the stack, but I haven't had the heart to get to it. The idea that...
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, another case of, you know, poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. You know, Mexico had a revolution or two or three. And at one point, they went a long way toward cleansing themselves of the perfidy of the church.
Uh-huh.
While the federal district that is basically Mexico City has legalized abortion, the rest of the country does not, and that of course is church driven.
Yep.
And there's an irony in it insofar as the blood of the peoples who inhabit that country go back to a civilization that had no problem whatsoever doing population control. It is solely the work of the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So the idea that a 10-year-old little girl who was impregnated in an act of incest, you know, we talk the kind of thing that we talk about in pro-choice discussions a lot. 10-year-old little girl impregnated in an act of incest, and they're actually having an argument in Mexico about whether or not this child can have an abortion.
And it's going to,
you know, I just,
it doesn't kill her outright. It's going to mess her up physically.
Right. And, yeah. You know, you just, and look, let's remember also, because the thing that struck me out of this story, Susan, was the fact that she's a 10-year-old and she's pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm sure the words precocious puberty mean something to you. Mexico, as we found out with the origins of the Smithfield flu, has been rendered a filthy place, not because of Mexicans, but because of American and multinational corporations preying on a country that has neither the infrastructure nor the governmental will to enforce environmental regulations, and they have made of Mexico a smoking toxic waste pit. And consequently, 10-year-olds reach puberty when 10-year-old little girls shouldn't be reaching puberty for a couple of more years.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not in the story. That's just babbling Bob.
No, that's babbling Sue, too, because that's one of the things that hit me is, first thing, why is this child even capable? normally she would not accept all those nice hormones they've been dumping.
And, of course, she comes from the state of Quintana Roo, which is down in the Yucatan Peninsula, and it's a, you know, it can be a very dry place on the surface, but that's one of those regions that is just dotted with cenotes, you know, these deep, deep, deep water reservoirs that are a function of the geology there. And when the toxins get into that, they're with you forever.
Yep.
Just a tragic story. And, it yet remains to be seen what the outcome will be. Hard to tell. Susan, good. Off to a great start, and you calm me down a little bit. So,
and if nothing else, I'm always a bummer.
No, you're not always a bummer. No, you calm me down a little bit because I'm just cross-eyed with this stupid twit in Nevada. I mean, I keep thinking I'm somehow anesthetized to it or immune to it. No, not so much.
Well, I thought it was funny because when I made the show post for tonight, the title for the show post is Chickens. So to hear you go doing the same thing, gee, it's nice to know I was right.
You know, it's that whole mind-reading thing that we've got established here within the Horn community. It was like the other night when David in Tennessee and ELO Sue at the same time mentioned the same thing, with no way of either one of them knowing, just boom, there.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
You know, 5 years will hardwire a group's brain together. And that ain't necessarily a bad thing.
Who knows? Give us a few more years and we can turn into the Borg and take over the world.
Susan, have a good evening, dear.
You too, and give my love to the family.
Sure will. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Garrett, what's up?
Oh, God. Yes. Sue Loudon is just, this is the it. If she wins this campaign, it's a sign, not that necessarily the Nevadans are stupid, it's that Harry Reid's a dweeb. Something this just insanely dense out of that woman is just a sign. If she wins, it's a sign that Harry, it's like Scott Brown winning in Massachusetts. Harry Reid is that much of a dweeb.
You know, it
I mean, he's handed something that, well, there's no way you can't run with this. And now it's national news.
Do you think, I mean, when she had to be off script when she went there.
Oh, she totally was. She tries to cover it up and what have you. But, you know, there's no way because, I mean, she was met the college Republicans down at UNLV, and there were people protesting her. There was even one person in a chicken suit.
Good. Make her own it.
Oh, yes. I mean, she may be ahead in the polls now, but unless Reid runs an idiotic campaign, he should be able to run this into the ground, especially since the unions hate her guts.
As the union should. But by the same token, how energized? Yeah. But really, Garrett, how energized are the unions going to be when they poured their heart, their soul, and their all into getting the Employee Free Choice Act and didn't get it? It's not that they didn't get it because of the House of Representatives. They didn't get it specifically because of the Senate and the fact that Harry Reid could not corral the sufficient votes to get the job done.
But the thing is that they have a history with her. Because she and her husband are casino executives.
Yeah.
And the culinary union and her went over the Santa Fe organizing. It got ugly. And they already beat her.
Garrett, how did she actually get a job inside the gaming industry? Did she marry the job?
I think she did. Yeah, because I think that's what she was, is that she married her husband and then got into it. But she's been married to this guy for, I mean, close to two decades now, at least. And because she's originally from Jersey.
Is anybody actually from Las Vegas?
Few.
I mean, does Wayne Newton, at this point, does Wayne Newton qualify?
Well, I think that nobody would argue if he tried to claim himself as a native.
Oh.
She used to be beauty queen, and she, you know.
Well, I mean, you've probably seen more footage of her than I have, and this is really catty and tacky, but really, she's had some work done, right? How old is she?
She's quite old. I mean, she used.
Now let's go easy with quite old, because in your book I might be quite old.
Okay, so I can't remember the exact year, but she's been around for a while. I mean, part of the thing is that she used to be how should we put it? She used to be on TV as a reporter, so that's part of it there. Yeah, because
she was a teenager in 1973 and was Miss New Jersey and second runner-up for Miss America. So that would put her at 18 and 73, 63, 13,
55,
so she's 55.
Yeah, so.
Or thereabouts.
But yeah.
At least. She's had some work.
She had to, especially since she, you know, did TV at the local CBS station here.
Oh, and you bad boy, I can hear what's going on in the background. Yeah, you're taunting me. You're listening to the draft, aren't you?
Well, it hasn't started yet.
But yeah, you got it on.
Yeah, but...
Oh, minus five, Garrett. Minus five for taunting the host.
Yeah, but I have to switch it at 4. I don't get to watch the draft itself because the Red Sox are on TV and they take precedent.
Yeah, but you'll go back during the commercials. Don't kid me.
Yeah, that's right, because it is Tebow doesn't get drafted day today, as you know.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Because it's only the first round.
Well, but I mean, I'm just so curious to find out if Pittsburgh will wind up having made a deal with anybody in the top 10 picks.
They have not.
That you
there
know
hasn't
of.
Hasn't a deal gone down yet, but let's face it. Fans in Pittsburgh are freaking furious. Because they were like, and the team, you get the feeling is, the team backed him at the start of this second one. You know, and they definitely backed him on this first accusation. But you get the feeling that they realized that it's only a lack of evidence why he's not got charged.
It's only the fact that his paid cop bodyguards off duty were blocking the bathroom door.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's everything is so dirty in that he is gone because the Steelers will lose out an entire season on principle. I mean, they've done it before. And the fact is it's coming out heavily that Bradshaw don't like him. I mean, Bradshaw has a rough history.
Oh, Terry hasn't made any bones about it.
Yeah, he's really been clean about it, and it's become, you know, officially public now that he don't like him. I mean, Bradshaw's had his faux pas in Pittsburgh, you know, because, you know, he didn't, partly because he just didn't like to appear in public. You know, he didn't appear at Rooney's funeral, and that pissed off a lot of people. I mean, that's the biggest thing he's done to tick off people in Pittsburgh. I mean, but Roethlisberger, they know he's got issues. The psychological evaluation, if it doesn't turn up that he's got issues, you know it's rigged.
Oh, yeah, and Marty asking, you know, who gives a toss what Bradshaw thinks? Well, in this case, you know, I do. Bradshaw's kind of a creepy fundy and stuff. No getting around that.
When it comes to the Steelers,
you kind of pay attention to his opinion because he's still loyal to the Roonies. And frankly, he knows as well or better than anybody else, what that franchise means to that community. And he actually does care about Pittsburgh. And frankly, Ben Rapist Bugger doesn't. But I'm going to roll on. Enjoy the warm up, and hope your beloved Sox work out.
Well, they have the last couple of nights, that's for sure.
And
dramatic fashion, mind you. But.
Yeah, you know, enough with the drama. You'd like to see them just win going away once in a while. I know how that feels.
Well, I don't know. It's a win is better than a loss. And the fact that they seem to be turning it around, though, I mean, certainly when Darnell McDonald came up to play, listening to it on the radio, the reaction was quite classic, especially when he turned around and hit a frickin' home run as a result. Everybody was like, what? And this is what the play-by-play was. Everybody's like, what? Who's this guy? And then, you know, he turns around and he hits this home run. He's become a woke hero in 2 days.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's... Oh.
I know.
But, yeah, it's just...
Well, you know, just keep up with Sue for us. You know, you're on the ground out there, so...
I had to call. I was like, oh God, I gotta call. When she started doing the chicken stuff, I was like, oh, I gotta chime in because
Well, you know, if SEIU and the restaurant workers and the, you know, all of those Unite Here guys and whatever, if they don't make massive investments in chicken suits,
I think they are because they have a history with her and. Since they have a history over her with the Santa Fe thing, and they hate her, and when she was in the state senate, she got elected, and then come re-election, they're the reason she lost. She lost by like 10 points because they just hammered on her. I mean, I have a feeling that on some level they're definitely ticked with Reed, but they realize that she would do them no favors whatsoever. I mean, it's a, you know, enemy of, you know, it's a lesser of two evil circumstance with the unions in town at this point. And really, in Reed's example, if he doesn't run a good campaign, he'll lose. But if he runs a halfway decent campaign, he'll definitely win with this. This is ammo. I mean, this is cartoon character ammo here.
And I don't know, somewhere, the thing is, and this needs to be born, this needs to be driven home real quick. This is Randy and stuff. This isn't legitimate economic policy. And I don't think I would credit her with having enough common sense to have read Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird with the passage about the trading hickory nuts for working on an entailment that I mentioned earlier. This is the kind of crap that comes out of Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged. Because in that idyllic little anarchist paradise that John Galt and the other creeps form in that the little holler in Colorado, that's what they do. Well, you build me a fence, and I'll build you a gold smelting furnace. And I'll give you...
Yeah.
It's just... people don't realize it, but that god-awful piece of trash book is just a piece of bad science fiction. It was, you know, for the late 1940s or early 1950s when it was published, it was basically Dianetics. It's the same thing. God-awful, unreadable, piss-poor writing, fantasy stuff.
Of course, the irony of it is...
You know, what? Blue... What was it? Blue copper or... What? Oh, stop. And And all these little birchers and the weirdos and the bigots, and our country's going to hell with all the brown people out there, Sparky. They latched onto it as economic policy. I mean, there were barter systems in ancient societies. Among other things, we mentioned the ancient Mexicans a little bit ago. They had their trade, their coinage, if you will, was taken in cacao beans because of the intrinsic value of chocolate and little bird quills of gold dust. And there were rough equivalents. This many cacao beans for that many quetzalcoatl feathers, whatever. But it had real value. You cannot have a chicken-based economy. I mean, it would have been fun. After this thing gets sufficient traction in the mainstream media, I want to start watching chicken futures on the Chicago Board of Trade. Because there's your barter economy, the futures market on the Board of Trade. But it's still tied to something else. I mean, I'm not saying that barter is bad, but it's got to have a value. You can't just, you have that chest clutching moment and you call 911 and you're sitting there in the living room gasping for breath and hanging on to a couple of Rhode Island Reds for all you're worth because it's the only way you're getting through the emergency room door. You see what this does to me, Garrett? Enjoy the ball game.
Yeah, just here's one thing. I can't wait until somebody connects and uses quotes from that Chicken Lover episode of South Park.
Oh, there's that, too.
Which is also the episode where they kind of out of nowhere ripped on Atlas Shrugged at the end. Because the whole plot of that was the whole Officer Barbrady couldn't read, and the one book he tried to read was
Atlas Shrugged. Yes, I remember.
I hate this book. Is awful. I'm never going to read again.
See you, Garrett.
If somebody can tie those two together, that'd be even better. The chickens and that. Oh.
Oh, which came first, the chicken or the barter? We'll talk soon, Garrett. Later.
Later, Paul.
Bye now.
Bye.
Why did the chicken cross the road? To get away from Sue Loudon! Hi. And onward we go. And nobody there. A couple of quick trips to the email bag. Cindy writing in from the Great Northwest in answer to my question, are the voters of Nevada that clueless? Well, Bob, yes, they are. See, we're trading here on my lack of knowledge of anything, much of anything, west of Missouri. When we go and do Netroots Nation this summer, God willing, and we can raise the funds and everything, that'll be the furthest west I've ever been, really. And I got to tell you, I'm harboring a fantasy about that. I just want to, I do. I'd love to just for a couple of hours. I want to rent a candy apple red convertible topped late 1960s the Cadillac convertible and go howling out that 2-lane road out of town into the desert while someone sitting beside me is reading passages from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. The part about the bats. I just want to. Just to say I did. But anyway, are the voters of Nevada that clueless? And Cindy says, well, Bob, yes, they are. There's no liberal radio or TV or news in Nevada. Nobody even noticed Doug Basham there, and his show is now gone. A large part of the state is Mormon, being so close to Utah and the screwed-up panhandle of Idaho. They're all nuts there. Then there's a little recognized but well-known fact that Republicans are big on gambling. They're big on prostitution. They're big on military. Can you name me any industry outside of the three I mentioned above that have business in Nevada? Oh, yes, restaurants and gun shows. They're big there. Yeah, because it was a Las Vegas gun show where that nut job Bedell picked up the handgun that had been sold into the stream of holy commerce by the Memphis Police Department that he then used to go and shoot up the metro station that that 9/11 truther and teabagger that he was used to shoot up the metro station there at the Pentagon. Yeah, gun shows. Right, Cindy. They're big there. And so is bartering, she says. You see, they pick clean their neighbors who lose at the tables. Big turnover there. The state of Nevada is a Republican wet dream, and this dimwit woman is just their type, for real. So says Cindy. Ron in Raleigh also writing in. He says, subject line, Nevada. Hey, Bob, my family lives in Vegas. Let me tell you, once you leave the city limits of Vegas, you are in some of the most benighted redneck countryside that you can imagine. Vegas and to a limited degree Reno are the only bright spots in this sandbox of a state. What about Carson City? But then again, you know, Twain himself did some pretty significant writing about that sort of thing. So, hey, look, there went the first hour of the program. Just gone. And you know how to take part if you want to. The phone number, toll-free, 877-443-2366. 877. Whew. Come on, Bob, slow down. It's easy. 877. The numeral 4. Head on. Or on your nickel, 304. 658-3333. Right? And email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. There. Sometimes I just got to slow down a little bit, and we will... We'll get it all sorted out. On the way, like I said, the 40th anniversary of Earth Day edition of the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And you are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. We'll be right back. Play it, Phil.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air after locking up the barn with the greatest of care. Then down in the hen house, somebody stirred when he shouted, "Who's there? Who's there? I'm telling the truth. This is what he heard. You can believe it or not. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep, and you bust in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground. You're raising up a powerful dust. We chickens trying to sleep. You bust in and hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch. And it takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way. And hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay. Nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, quiet yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep and you bust in and baba oodle, baba oodle with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Now there ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground while you raising up a powerful dust. We chickens try to sleep and you bust in and yaggedy, 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 it's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch, and it takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. Now there ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, now quiet yourself. Stop that fuss, cause there ain't nobody here but us. And kind of point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble up and hit the hay.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, April 22nd, Earth Day, 2010.
Oil rigs exploding, volcanoes erupting, Senate climate legislation coming soon. Plus, on the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, a look back at the very first one.
Good evening. A unique day in American history is ending, a day set aside for a nationwide outpouring of mankind seeking its own survival. Day.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So much noxious waste is involved that some people here have begun to call their city Filthydelphia.
Well, meow, 1970 CBS Evening News. This is your Green News Report.
Earth Day, a question of survival.
Okay, Desi Doyen, well, happy Earth Day to you.
Well, happy Earth Day to you too, Brad.
You know, here at the Green News Report, every day is Earth Day.
Yep, and every day offers you a new opportunity to make better choices and share what you know with your friends and family.
Yeah. What do you got for us on the Green News today?
Yes, here's what's going on your Earth today. An explosion on an oil rig drilling platform in the Gulf of Mexico Tuesday night, about 50 miles off the Louisiana coast, has been described by officials as catastrophic. 114 workers were rescued throughout the night. 17 were medevaced to the mainland. The Coast Guard was left to search for the remaining 12 workers. The explosion left the oil rig, owned and operated by Transocean Limited, in flames and heavily tilted, raising concerns that it might actually topple. The Federal Minerals Management Service says, as yet, there have been no reports of any oil spill. The Minerals Management Service also says that there were 39 fires or explosions reported on offshore drilling platforms in the first 5 months of 2009, the latest period for which statistics are available.
And, you know, between the recent mine explosion and now this oil rig explosion, all I'm saying is you rarely hear about solar panels catching fire, windmills blowing up, or algae farms exploding. I'm just saying.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
Air travel in Europe is underway again after a total shutdown for nearly a week due to the volcanic eruption in Iceland. The airline industry is beginning to unwind the tangled mess of stranded travelers while at the same time also trying to meet currently scheduled flights, a process that could take several days or more. Now, climate scientists say the Iceland volcano is too small to have a long-term effect on the global climate, but it can happen, the most recent being the eruption of Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991 when volcanic ash was ejected so high into the atmosphere it created a haze that reduced sunlight reaching the Earth's surface, and that actually lowered global average temperatures by a full degree Fahrenheit.
So this volcano could actually be good for the Earth? It might actually cool the Earth?
No, the scientists say this eruption is too small for that. However, regarding emissions, volcanoes can be significant sources of greenhouse gas emissions. But scientists say that in this case, again, actually air travel emits more. The emissions output of the Iceland volcano is actually less than the European aviation industry on a daily basis. So they expect that this eruption will actually lead to a net reduction in global carbon emissions due to the cancellation of so many flights. The new Senate bill covering comprehensive climate and clean energy legislation is scheduled to be introduced next week on Monday, April 26th. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a co-sponsor of the bill, very pointedly rejected introducing the bill today on Earth Day. Graham has been working on the bill for months.
Wait, hang on. He purposely would not release the bill on Earth Day?
Yes, he said this is an energy bill, not a climate bill.
What a creep.
Graham has been working on the bill for months alongside Massachusetts Democrat John Kerry and Independent Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. Now, the White House has said that it will focus on climate legislation after dealing with financial industry reform. So that'll be cutting it close in the run-up to the November midterm congressional elections.
As I said before, I think the fight over climate change legislation could make the fight over health care seem like, you'll pardon me, a tea party.
Finally, it is the 40th anniversary of Earth Day today, the annual event dedicated to the idea that maybe we ought to take better care of our little life raft in the vast ocean of space since it's the only one we've got. The very first Earth Day in 1970 was started by Senator Gaylord Nelson, Democrat of Wisconsin, after the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire.
Thanks to our friend Kate Shepard over at Mother Jones. On the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, it's interesting to look back at how the CBS Evening News, hosted by Walter Cronkite, reported on the very first one in an extraordinary hour-long special. Here's just a little bit of that.
One of the biggest Earth Day observances was in Philadelphia, where an estimated 20 to 40,000 persons gathered in perfect weather from the city's largest park. It was an Earth Day success story, a major demonstration in a major city. But it did not come easily. There were many organizational problems, including a heated controversy over whether to accept financial aid from industries causing pollution.
Welcome, sulfur dioxide. Hello. Carbon monoxide.
Welcome, sulfur dioxide. Hello, carbon monoxide. A song from the worldwide hit musical Hair. It was one of the first hints suggesting that young people were beginning to care as much about the environment as they do about the peace movement and civil rights. Their dream for the age of Aquarius was to let the sunshine in. Let the sunshine in.
The entire hour-long report is available at our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and it's a fascinating look back. There wasn't a lot of talk about energy, and certainly there was no talk about global warming. A lot of talk about pollution 40 years ago. Happy Earth Day to you all. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Earth Day Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back to hour number two, 7 minutes past the hour here in the studios in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, west by God, almost level West Virginia. I'm Bob, and let's stand not upon the order of our going, but go at once and go forthwith to the phones, which the caller gave up. Well, that's okay. These things happen. You know, sometimes you sit there on hold, somebody else calls you, you know, you get it. Someday I'll have a producer, and we'll know these things, so I won't do that. But we will continue on our way and go to the phones again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
All right. Happy Earth Day to you.
And to you as well, sir.
Where in the world did you get that song about the chicken?
Oh, the one I played right before the top of the hour?
Yeah.
Oh, that was none other than the inimitable Phil Harris.
Phil Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Ain't nobody here but us chickens.
Well, you know, I could send you a recording of me doing Bull Moose Jackson's Get Your Big Nose Out My Business, or Betty Davis suing Baby Jane Hudson's I've Written a Letter to Daddy. Would you like those?
Do please.
I don't think you would if you played them. I think this. Well,
we take all comers here, Jim.
I see. Referencing a comment about Iceland, you know, that's an interesting situation in that island or that small whatever it is over there, of fire and ice, and what it has done recently, you know, to just paralyze European aviation and what it could possibly do, because I understand that Iceland is like separating a foot or so every year. It's dividing. It's over some type of huge magma fault.
Oh, it is. Iceland is literally riding on a vast deep, and I don't want to say puddle, but a lake, a sea of molten, well, magma presupposes molten, but not only that, but it's sort of a perfect volcanologic storm, because the sea of magma also has in the middle of it a great upthrusting from the core of the earth that is the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
It is, exactly, and you know it's sort of aligned so they can work together, if you know what I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it. And you know, these things, if that thing should go, well, the last time I think they really had problems with it were back in like the 1780s, and I don't know how many millions of people starved to death because of the climatological impact of that volcano. And also, it caused such a hard winter in France in 1789, they think that's what really was one of the
precipitating factors for the French Revolution. Yes, I had read that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I was watching a special on Iceland last night, and I don't think I'd like to have real estate there.
Well, you'd either wind up with more or less of it one way or the other, Jim.
Well, I mean, in the space of like, less than 48 hours, an island was built right out all in the sea right off the coast when one of those things erupted and it came all the way up.
Yes, and they kind of got to watch a little microcosm of the birth of the actual island itself. Now, Jim, knowing that you are a voracious reader in your own right, let me suggest something to you. If you want to get an understanding of the development of human life on Iceland, there is no better book than Jared Diamond's Collapse. He spends probably a quarter of the book on how humans tried to eke out a living there and the differences in lifestyles and living arrangements between the native peoples, who were quite successful, versus the white Europeans who came over and tried and failed, more or less, to maintain white Scandinavian culture there.
Oh, okay.
It is absolute. It's gripping. It's almost like a detective story or a mystery yarn as it unfolds.
Well, you know, I can remember the first time I went over the pond, I went Icelandic Airways, and as part of that itinerary, you have to stay in Reykjavik or Keflavik, and then you land in Luxembourg. And it wasn't a bad experience at all, so spending the night there.
No, I've read a lot. You know, I do all my traveling via the magic Bob Kincaid armchair. I've read a lot that there's much to be said for the long summer nights in Reykjavik.
Oh, it's incredible, incredible. And, you know, particularly when you can look at parts of the aurora.
Exactly. And, you know, that's one of my son's fondest dreams is to see the aurora someday. But he looked at me and he said, Dad, I'd like to go to Alaska and maybe see it, but I don't want to go there as long as Sarah Palin's there.
Well, Sarah's probably, hasn't she sort of, like, left Alaska for a while? Isn't she looking for greener pastures?
She's doing everything in her power to stay out of there.
Well, I wish she would. I'll tell you that right now.
But somebody else is going to have to suffer for it. You know, watch her move, eventually, watch her move to a blue state. You know, she's not going to move to Texas or Alabama or anything like that. Oh, no. She'll move to Cape Cod.
she would move, like, have a house at the Hamptons or someplace like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I can see her up there now at the Hamptons. I don't think she quite fit in, but that's okay.
Then again, she might also fit in pretty well down there along about Kiowa and Hilton Head in your old neck of the woods.
Yeah. I think South Carolina would be a perfect place for her. They, you know, a lot of the people down there think quite a bit of her, you know. And she would fit in with Andre Bauer. And by the way, in Columbia, they elected a black mayor.
Did they really?
He won in a runoff by 2,000 votes against the guy, C. Kirkman Finley, whose grandfather was mayor. And so Columbia has its black mayor. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I had a post on my Facebook page yesterday, Jim, from our South Carolina correspondent, David. We've got a gang of Davids on this program. We got David in Tennessee, David in Maine, David in San Francisco, David in South Carolina, and David in South Carolina has been with us among the longest. And he just posted something on my Facebook page yesterday. He said, going out anywhere in public in South Carolina with all these repig-licking idiots is like being forced to jump into a swimming pool when you know everyone in the pool's just peed in the water.
That's about the truth. Or, is, you know, you're the only person there who's naked and the rest have clothes on. And, you know, it's, have you heard some of the stuff that Andre Bauer has been spouting on?
Oh, my God, yeah, the don't feed poor people because Granny always told me not to feed stray animals.
And Andre, Andre is as gay as a goose.
Right. Well, and you know, that was one of those delightful bits of irony when Mark Sanford went off hiking the Appalachian Trail, as they now call it. I never knew that it ran all the way to Buenos Aires, but apparently it does. But there was a little movement afoot that said, let's impeach Mark Sanford, and all the family values and uptight, closeted, the creepies in South Carolina said, no, we can't be impeaching Mark Sanford because then we'd have us a gay governor.
Is that what they said?
Oh, yeah, that was a big part of why Mark Sanford was not impeached.
Well, Andre's running.
Well, he's running now, but that's why they didn't just get rid of Mark Sanford right off the bat.
Oh, well, you know, that man is mentally ill. I watched him when he gave that speech from Hilton Head back before all this stuff broke, and he reminded me a lot of that general in Dr. Strangelove, played by, what's his name?
Sterling Hayden?
Sterling Hayden, yeah. What was it?
General Jack B. Ripper.
Jack B. You know, really, he sounded a lot like that. It's just absolute blue.
Yeah, did everything but talk about the purity of essence and precious bodily fluids.
He almost did, really. He sure did. I mean, he's just absolutely nuts. I mean, South Carolina has really been known to produce some very strange statements. And that other guy, Lindsey Graham, the senator.
Well, he's catching some hell now. Have you seen that, Jim?
No, but I hear he's a friend of Dorothy's, too.
The Streisand ticket holding, Oscar Wilde reading.
Is that what they're saying about him?
Some South Carolina Family Values Coalition, right-wingers, has come out publicly and called for Lindsey Graham to come out of the closet. They have asserted that Lindsey Graham's sexuality is the biggest open secret in South Carolina and Washington, D.C., and said, it's time for you to come out of that log cabin closet, Lindsey Graham.
You know, I always thought the term gay Republican would be an oxymoron.
No, that's Rush Limbaugh.
I'll tell you, an interesting person to read about the gay Southern person, I don't know if you've ever, or the gay Southern character, is... It's a book called Southern Ladies and Gentlemen by Florence King. Now, if you really want to read something that will cause you to sit back in your chair and start guffawing, and your wife's going to come in there and say, what the hell are you reading? Read Southern Ladies and Gentlemen and Confessions of a Failed Southern Woman by Florence King.
I think I need to get hold of that.
You do. She is a native of Fredericksburg, Virginia, and she was educated at the University of Mississippi back in the 50s. And she is an absolutely brilliant writer and a satirist and every other thing as well. But she is incredible. I've got all her books. But Southern Ladies and Gentlemen, they have one character that is devoted to the Southern gay man and how he is sort of like, you know, the odd fellow who is accepted. And as long as he doesn't go around, you know, diddling little boys and stuff like that, he can generally.
And right. And anybody who's ever grown up in a Southern town knows that guy.
Exactly. He's the one who lives in Aunt So-and-so's house, and he's real nice, and he has lots of old antiques and things like that. And
probably plays the organ in the Presbyterian church.
And he's just he's not referred to as gay, but he's a bachelor. Or
he's a confirmed bachelor.
He never found the right girl.
Never did. But he can play that organ over there at the First Presbyterian Church, and, you know, we wouldn't have no summer music theater program here if we didn't have him.
Uncle so-and-so. You're right. Absolutely. Well,
I grew up it ain't that far from South Carolina to Alabama, Jim.
No, it's not. No, it isn't. Not at all. But you know, if the best they can do is Andre Bauer or Lindsey Graham, well, I say that's pretty bad. But that's not the best because, you know, look at Jim Clyburn, the black representative from South Carolina. Now, that man's got a lot of power in Washington.
Yes, he does.
He's been there a long time, and he is no
man. Isn't he the whip?
Exactly. And, you know, when you want to get something done in the House, you better have his stamp of approval or his imprimatur on it, or it's not going to get done. I think he's with Ways and Means, Bob.
May very well be.
He might be on Ways and Means, and that's a pretty powerful position there. So South Carolina has made its contributions in many ways, but you got to give Andre credit for one thing. After breaking his leg in some kind of motorcycle accident, he managed to hook it across the new bridge down there in Charleston. So yay for Andre for that. Maybe he was chasing a man or something like that. And let me shut up before I say too much. But anyway,
what makes 3 hours difficult for me? I don't get to shut up before I say too much, Jim.
Well, if you'd like to hear me do Bull Moose Jackson's Get to Take Your Big Nose Out My Business, I'll tell you, if you've ever heard that, if you've ever seen that movie, the John Waters movie with Johnny Depp.
Crybaby?
Well, they've got a big scene where Tracy Lords has run off from home. And, you know, Tracy Lords, good Lord, what a character she is.
Yes.
And she's standing up there hitchhiking, and some guy comes by in a big pink Cadillac, and they're playing that song by Bull Moose Jackson, who was quite a saxophonist and a musician in his own right, but he did a lot of bawdy songs during the 20s and the 30s. But that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And another thing, as far as John Waters is concerned, have you ever seen Pecker?
No.
Well, the reason I mention that is because teabagging is the term. Have you ever heard the term teabagging used before the tea people start doing their tea?
Oh, I knew what teabagging was, but I never know.
Okay, that's where they actually have a bar in that movie where teabagging goes on. And I'm not going to go into exactly what that is, and we know what it is. And
yeah, we will, as the saying goes, take it as read.
But anyway, I just wondered, teabagging. Well, in addition to teabagging, there's helicoptering, and we won't talk about that either. But if you ever have a chance to hear John Waters do It's a Filthy World, he will explain all those terms in graphic detail for you.
Good deal. Sounds
all right.
Like,
well, listen,
sounds like fun.
Well, it is a very good lecture about, you know, just it's a filthy world and people in it and how they behave. And, you know, he has an interesting insight. He's a very smart person. But anyway, I hope you have a good broadcast, and didn't mean to get all over all of that, but enjoy your Earth Day and the remainder of it. It looks like it's going to rain here, so so I don't.
Now, it's clouded up a little bit over this way too.
All right, sir. Well, listen. You have a good evening. It's a good night.
All right. Take care, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye, bye now. I got to get that Florence Jackson book. That just sounds too fun to pass up. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody home? Apparently not. It's a tough night here. Patience, people. Come on. Let's see here. Well, you know what? Let's take a little break. Because we've had some fun stuff. But now I fear we are going to go into some ugly territory. And this really does, you know, we're really not segueing the way I might like for us to otherwise do it. So we will. We'll take a little break. It's about 25 minutes past the hour, so by the time we get done with a little musical interlude or what have you, we'll be halfway through the program. You know how to get in touch with the program. You know how to get on the air. It's no struggle, God knows. Easy, easy, easy. The number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Share your thoughts, whatever. Jump right in. The conversation is fine on America's listener-supported liberal voice via the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Got bills to pay. Got bills to pay. And miles to go before we sleep. Here on the horn. Going out to Sue Loudon. The genius of Lowell George and Little Feet.
I've seen the bright lights of Memphis and the Commodore Hotel. And underneath the street lamp, I met a sailor there. But she took me to the river where she cast a spell. And in that
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I won't heed the
battle call. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch's gone, and Kelly Apple is out on the list, and then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
No more now.
But your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Accept a chicken, doctor. How do you feel about livestock, Dr. Wu? Bob shouldn't sing on the radio.
Yeah, the things I'll do for a rhyme. Shame on me doing that to a perfectly lovely Steely Dan classic. But you know what? I've come up with a new idea to work with Sue Loudon. You know, she wants to take a chicken to the doctor. She may have been close. No, here's how it works. You don't take a chicken to the doctor, you take an egg to the doctor. And in that egg, they insert live flu virus so you can do your own at-home virus, flu shot inoculations. Instead of doing it with a needle or anything, you just crack the inoculated poisonous egg into a shot glass, throw in a little Tabasco sauce, and boom, and hope for the best. You know, last night I mentioned the Reverend Jonathan Edwards, who was an early one of America's great early theologians of the Protestant flavor, of course. He only lived to be 53 years old, Jonathan Edwards. He was frail and sickly all of his life, which probably explains why he went into the clergy instead of, you know, doing honest work. But at the age of 53, in what had what you can only describe as a noble intention, Dr. Jonathan Edwards, you know, not medical, but theological, and come on, for that era of you know, the mid-18th century, just not a lot of difference between that and those two kinds of doctors and Theodoric of York medieval barber, frankly, for that matter. What you need is some leeches and a good bloodletting. Get rid of that black bile and those ill humors. No, concerned about polio outbreaks, he took an early inoculation. Pretty sure it was polio, not smallpox. It's polio. And that early inoculation with live virus killed Jonathan Edwards at the time when he was the brand spanking shiny new president of the College of New Jersey, which went on to become what we hope will, in about 4 years, be the alma mater of Cassie, our dear friend, Princeton University. He succeeded the Reverend Aaron Burr as president of that college, the Reverend Aaron Burr being the father of Aaron Burr, who went on to become the Vice President of the United States and felt the full weight of Thomas Jefferson's wrath. Silly little bit of trivia, but, you know, that's what it can be for all of us. It can be, you know, sort of a dice roll. You know, sort of you got your little inoculated egg in the shot glass, a little Tabasco sauce, and you kind of hold it up and say, honey, here's seeing you in the afterlife or day after tomorrow, whichever comes first. Bloomp! That's the medicine that Sue Loudon wants for America. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't... Chicken caca is not nice in the chicken yard. I mean, it's great for your garden, adds a lot of nitrogen and that kind of stuff, but I don't want it in my doctor's offices. And it's hard enough to get any rest in a hospital as it is, and, you know, having a bunch of roosters crowing cock-a-doodle-doo at the first sign of light in the morning, that's not going to be good for pain. You know, stress is hard for the healing process. But you know what? In Sue Loudon's world, everybody's going to get up at the crack of the dawn, or as we colloquially say as well, up, get up with the chickens. You just can't beat these forward-thinking repiglicans now, can you? To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me, Bob, you're talking to?
It is you I'm talking to.
Oh, okay, great. It's Clayton, man.
Hey, Clayton, what's up?
Well, I get a couple of things. I think that... You know, this whole thing, you know, maybe she's got something here for us. Because, frankly, I think we could get a lot of money for that moonshine. And those people just haven't realized how many vitamins are in that. I've got a buddy in Berea, Kentucky, just south of Berea, actually.
I know Berea well.
Makes the greatest moonshine with strawberries.
That's boutique moonshine, isn't it, Clayton?
I don't know what it is, but I'm just very happy to share it with him.
I've had it with peaches, with blackberries, with strawberries, and dang, it's good.
Oh yes. I had to use some as a palate cleaner a couple of years ago. Somebody gave me some that they made, and it just was horrid stuff. Anyway, I got a complaint, man.
What have I done?
I got to yell at you.
All right.
Now, Ayn Rand and her ilk and her children and her followers are anarchist capitalists. They aren't anarchists. Anarchists are like Proudhon that I've mentioned to you before. Proudhon was late 1700s, early 1800s, and he was a predecessor to socialism, other than Christ himself being the original socialist. But Proudhon was one of the original socialists that gave Karl Marx and the rest of them the basis for socialism in the late 1800s. And then another one that is really a great anarchist leader was Emma Goldman.
Yes, of course.
she had a lot to do with feminism and unionism. And Proudhon had a lot to do with unionism, too. But I think that those are two people that have been neglected.
Oh, they absolutely have. And also neglected is the fact that, you know, Emma Goldman went over to have a look at the Bolshevik Revolution and got disgusted with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why she became, quote unquote, an anarchist. But Proudhon had he taught himself to think. He didn't depend on the schools to teach him to think. After all, there wasn't much back then in terms of schools. But he would go into the libraries and just spend hours studying the writings of the old Greeks and every other philosopher he could read. And the anarchist capitalists are just a bunch of pigs. They're just in it for themselves.
Yeah, and when I say anarchist in relation to the Randians, you know, for a long time we used the phrase, and still do from time to time, Clayton, anarcho-Randians. And, you know, what they want, the anarchy that they want, is the real wild-eyed guns in the streets stuff. And I don't know, how could we, instead, Somali anarchists?
There you go. That would describe them real well. I'm trying to think of a better word for them, because if you look at the Randians, they are really into themselves. They are into what's in it for me.
They are, well, frankly, they are id-driven, Clayton.
What is it when you... I had a stroke a couple of years ago, so my mind just doesn't work like it used to. But where you're madly in love with yourself...
Oh, narcissistic?
Anarchist narcissists. Because they want everything to be for them.
Oh, I think you've just put one out of the park, Clayton. Anarcho-narcissists.
Yes, I think that really works. I think that does.
You know,
anyway.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to encourage you to think. I consider myself an anarchist, and I'm also a unionist, and the IWW really started out with anarchists, too.
Well, and you have to take into account the real meaning of anarchy. It is a Greek-rooted word, because the leaders of what? Ancient Athens were the archons.
That's right.
And to be anarchonic was to have a society that had no archons. In other words, had no superstructure, had no leadership, no overarching, no overarching the leadership structure. A society that would be based upon, I suppose, consensus would be a way of describing it.
Actually, that's pretty close to it, because they believed, and we still do, that it's a free associations of individuals into communities rather than the forced association that government gives us. For instance, one of the quotes that I like from Emma was, you know, if voting worked, they'd make it illegal.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll let you go, man. Thank you very much.
Well, Clayton, thanks for the call, and thanks for the little call out on the carpet. It was well deserved on my part.
Take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
And that is Clayton, and this is one of those silly little trivia moments. Where did Bob first hear the word anarchy? This goes to prove that there are a million ways to learn out there. I was in eighth grade when Monty Python and the Holy Grail came to a cinema complex across the river from where I grew up. And I said, Mom, Dad, I want to go see Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Sure, okay, kid. And I got my money, went and sat in the theater by myself, and struggled to get the jokes. The obvious visuals, I got. At 14, the dirty words, I got. But the intellectual humor I had to work on and had to come home and think about and study over. And there is that one phrase where Arthur, looking at the peasants mucking about in the filth, you know,
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Asks, well, who is your lord? And the answer comes, we don't have a lord. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
we take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week. But all the decisions of that officer must be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting by a pure majority, a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs, but by a two-thirds majority in the case...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Shut up! Will you shut up? And that word's anarcho-syndicalist. And so the next, you know, when I had study hall the next day, whatever, whenever it was that I went back to school, back to junior high school, back to good old Forest Hills, where I had, I spent my study hall period doing work in the library, learning about the Dewey Decimal System, I'll have you know, and reshelving books and whatnot. I looked up, because back then, even in Alabama, you could learn about things like anarcho-syndicalism. And I looked it up, and I learned about it, and it led me down a little garden path of American history and the oppression that took place in and around the First World War period in the administration of Woodrow Wilson. And I just read in shocked horror the way that political dissidents were treated in this country. And you know what? That's a tough little wake-up call to a 14-year-old. And it's probably why those books aren't in those libraries anymore. We can't have little Bobs out there learning about anarcho-syndicalism at the tender age of 14 when they're supposed to be learning about Jesus. Especially not in Alabama. Now, I'm going back to the phones in just a moment, but I want to play something for you. Speaking of Alabama, I have for you from our friends over at the Political Carnival and Gotta Laugh by way of Texas Betsy, I've got an ad for you for the governor's race in the state of Alabama. This is precious. You know, I won't just waste your time. This is gorgeous.
I'm Tim James. Why do our politicians make us give driver's license exams in 12 languages? This is Alabama. We speak English. If you want to live here, learn it.
That's really all you need from Tim James. This is Alabama. We speak English. Learn it. Yeah. I remember dedicated people like, like my theater teachers, Patty Hughes and Pat Rutherford and various other people at my dear old high school who spent hours upon hours trying to teach the little Alabamian children to speak English. Because we didn't speak it so good. And I remember being taught to... Doggone it! The word is G-E-T. Pronounce that for me.
Get.
No! Get. 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 Not get. Irony is lost on Tim James. I can only assume that Tim James is the son of Fob James, who is a right-wing piece of crap. Tim James running for governor. Let's just enjoy that one more time because it's precious. And don't you love the tinkling piano in the background?
Why do our politicians make us give driver's license exams in 12 languages? This is a...
Well, you dipshit! It's because if you give driver's license exams to people who are legally in the state of Alabama but don't speak English yet, if you give the driver's license exams to them in English when they speak, I don't know, Vietnamese, they're not gonna understand that big red sign that says stop to you doesn't say stop to them. If you give them a little translational help, the first generation can maybe create a second generation of highly productive Americans instead of having them die in fiery car crashes, you dipshit!
Alabama. We speak English.
English! English! Not English. No G. English. Can't pronounce my R's or G's when I'm speaking Southernese. Tell us about it, Jimmy! English.
If you want to live here...
If you want to live here... Oh, my theater teachers from high school. And they're both quite alive. Are having a hissy right now. If you want to live here... What, Tim James, if we want to live here?
Learn it. We're only giving that test in English.
Wonly? What the hell is a wonly?
Why were we giving that test in English?
Even though I, as governor, will exempt myself from having to properly speak the language.
If I'm governor, maybe it's the businessman in me, but we'll save money.
Nah, it's the asshole in you. It's the asshole in you. It really is. Republican businessman for governor. By the way, do you lift weights? If this is the guy I think he is, if Tim James is the son of Fob James, if this is the guy I think he is, then the businessman that he is the scion of Fob James, and their company is DP, Diversified Products. Anybody lift weights out there? Ever seen that logo, DP? You ever buy any DP weight products, athletic products, anything along those lines? If you have, you've helped contribute to the political campaign of Tim James, who says, only going to offer the driver's license examination in English. Maybe he can put out another commercial encouraging people to bring a chicken to the driver's license examination station. Maybe. Maybe it is the businessman in him.
And it makes sense. Does it to you?
To you? To you? Does it to you?
Speak the speech, I pray thee, trippingly from the tongue. I'm such a liberal elitist, I should be ashamed of myself. He can't help that he's a mush-mouthed southern boy. That's boa. B-U-H-O-A, I think. Boa. W. B-U-H-O-A-W. Boa. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, you are exactly right. That Mr. Tim James is exactly who you think he is.
That's Fob's boy. Boa. That's Fob boy.
We're Fob again, my friend.
We've been Fobbed.
You may remember that line in the Drive-By Truckers song about George Wallace. I have to admit that compared to Fob James, George Wallace don't seem that bad.
Yeah, that Fob. Well, see, yeah, I remember Fob one. Because Fob, the first time old Fob ran as a run for the governor, old Fob run as a Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
And that was when I was in a high school trying to learn how to say get and not git.
That's correct. You remember correctly, that was Mr. Fob James' son. You'll also recall that back in those days, there was all this school prayer. And you may have heard of this episode where Mr. Fob James decided that there should be a school prayer, and so he had his son write a school prayer for the children of Alabama.
That guy.
You remember this?
I remember this.
That guy. Yeah. Yeah, that's Tim James.
Maybe it's because I'm a businessman.
Maybe it's because I'm a businessman. I know why we have driver's license tests in 12 languages in Alabama. It's so that you don't have a bunch of legal immigrants unable to work, unable to get around. And
well, there is that now, isn't there, Matt?
They're going to get in the car and they're going to drive anyway. Look, I knew four people who've all come to Florence, Alabama. From other countries. I've known two Vietnamese guys, and I've known a pair of people from Iran.
And you know, growing up there, I did too. I knew somebody that come to Florence, Alabama from New York State.
And some would say they don't speak English there either. But my point is this. When the Anvars, this couple from Iran, arrived, they didn't speak a whole lot of English, but they both spoke French, and they took the driver's license test in French. And when these two Vietnamese guys, Trinh and Tien, came and lived with my family for a little while, they were able to get a driver's license because there was a test in Vietnamese. So what they were able to do was work and eventually start businesses. American dream, huh? You know, these guys were really hardworking folks. I mean, even Mrs. Anvar, she was raised in the lap of Persian luxury. She'd never worked a day in her life. but she knew the American dream was about work.
And work she did.
And work she did.
And the community was the better for it.
The community was the better for it. You know, this is what we and I'm listening to Tim James, and I'm thinking, okay, how exactly does their ability to get a driver's license, how does that hurt you? What zero-sum universe do you live in where them being able to get a driver's license hurts you?
It's bad for traditional Alabama conservative family values. That's what it is.
That's right. It's bad for traditional conservative values because...
Only want Alabamians to love Jeebus driving the automobiles on the avenues and the boulevards. Only.
You know, it's so strange. These two people have left Iran because of the purges after the revolution. These two Vietnamese guys had the bad luck to be related to someone who was declared a counter-revolutionary. You know, these were basically the kind of people you want coming to America, right? I mean, when you think of conservative values and immigration, you think of, yeah, these are exactly the sort of people Tim James would want to have a driver's license and live and work in Alabama. But no, we must instead pander to the worst instincts of the viewer. But here's the thing that's going to get him, though. You ask Tim James anything about an actual issue that actually affects Alabama, and he will shrug and he will give you some kind of pat answer. He will not give you a specific...
Like taking a chicken to the doctor.
Yes, exactly. That's the sort of thing he does. He will be very gaffe-prone, and I'm actually praying that he wins the GOP.
Now, was that gaffe-prone or gas-prone?
Gaffe. Prone.
Oh, okay. G-A-S-S-E. Just checking. I don't want to be in a room with
you. Gas prone, that would be bad, too. But he's got more money than all the rest of the candidates put together.
Does Arthur Davis have a chance against him?
Oh, God, yes. Arthur Davis is probably the first candidate I've seen in my lifetime in Alabama who really understood what's wrong with Alabama and was willing to talk about it. Yes, he's actually got the highest net positives right now of any of the candidates. If you call up and do a poll and you
he also speaks a very clipped, clean English, if I recall correctly.
He does.
Pick that up on Havid Yad, I do believe.
Yeah. See, he picked it up somewhere. But, you know, he's very popular in his district. The state of Alabama likes him. I think he can do it, particularly when you look at how Tim James can't even take questions from the Times Daily. I mean, I've got an article I can...
Oh, no. Oh, do please.
Oh, yeah. He got interviewed by the Times Daily reporter and...
The hard-hitting reporters from the...
You know, this is a small-town newspaper, and Trevor Stokes was like, Tim James doesn't seem to know a lot about issues affecting Northwest Alabama.
Not the sharpest, not. Well, why would you expect him to? He's from down around Dothan. Maybe. I don't know.
He probably could not answer your basic questions about the problems there either. He's not really all that bright.
He's that second generation of the nouveau riche that we were talking about with Robert from Japan on the show last night.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of which, I wanted to say something about your previous caller. Your previous caller talked about narcissism.
Yes.
Narcissism is an essential component of the paranoid style of politics. This is something I track on my blog all the time, as you know. If you really boil down the paranoid universe, you get to three basic ideas, which are, one, they, and put that word they in scare quotes, they are after you. And two, they control everything. And three, they are all in it together. It's really a very self-centered view of the universe, isn't it?
Oh, it is quite. And of course, it, especially in a place like Alabama and Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, etc., goes way back because they all want our white women.
That's right. They. It was they.
Because we got right. tiny little white Johnsons, and we know how it is.
And now they, of course, are Mexicans or someone else new or Vietnamese or something.
The liberals. Liberals.
Right. They is interchangeable because they are all in it together. They become monolithic, they. It's everybody except us. And who are us? You know, when you look at that demographic, who are us that are into this paranoid style of politics? It's all white people in their mid-40s. You know?
And upward.
And upward, yes, yes. The baby boom generation. It's a little odd to me how that works out. But I wanted to ask you, have you heard about this girl in Croatia who had a fever and was in a coma for 24 hours and woke up speaking perfect German?
No.
You haven't heard about this?
Okay. Do enlighten me, please, Matt.
I will enlighten you, okay? Now, it's not that she didn't know German to begin with. We don't even know how old this girl was. She was apparently in grade school. But she had been studying German, and she was reading German and watching German TV to get better at it when she had a dangerous fever and went into a coma. When she woke up, she was speaking, according to the doctors, she was speaking better German than before, but had lost her ability to speak Croatian.
And God knows she won't be getting to take no driver's license examination in Alabama because we're only going to offer it in English.
She will not be able to take a driver's license in Croatian or German when she comes to Alabama.
Because we're only offering it in English.
For your own good.
Yes. I'm sorry, I just had to interject that, Matt.
You go right ahead.
Such a little attention whore.
But I've heard of this sort of thing before, so I got fascinated with this story last night. I looked up some information. It turns out that this is actually a condition known as foreign accent syndrome. There have been more than 60 recorded cases since 1941. From the Seattle Times, we have a woman who began speaking gibberish at the chiropractor's office, and when she began speaking normally again, she had a German accent tinged with what some friends thought was vaguely French or Russian. She had never.
She must have been from the Sudetenland.
She had never been to a foreign country other than Canada. In the Yorkshire, in the UK, we have a Yorkshire lad who, after a brain trauma, suddenly could no longer use short vowels and started speaking the Queen's English. But it turns out, Bob, that this is actually brain damage. This is actually a sign of brain damage. See, here's what's happening. A person, like a stroke victim, who gets some sort of brain damage, may lose the ability to make certain sounds or combine certain sounds. For example, you might lose the ability to say short vowels. So what we do as the listener is we say, oh, that's an accent. And it seems to us that their accent changes, but in fact we are thinking that the accent has changed. Her German pronunciation, this girl, her German pronunciation may have apparently improved, but you have to ask yourself how much of that is the fact that they're two different languages. German and Croatian come from two different language families. Croatian, being Slavic, has lots of these letter combinations that are not used in German. They're called palatalized sounds. It's where you get all those consonants sitting next to each other.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Well, that doesn't appear in German. And so they're saying, oh, well, she speaks German so much better than she did before. There's a couple of things going on. One, the part of her brain that knows Croatian has apparently been turned off or is there no more. And she's no longer having to fight for cognitive dominance between two language centers. Okay? So the concentration factor goes up. She's a better German speaker because she's only able to speak German. Kind of like blind people who seem to have superior hearing. What they're actually doing is they're paying more attention because they're not distracted by their vision.
Right.
It's also possible that losing the Croatian accent is improving her German pronunciation. So this is just an interesting little story that I came across, and it's got me in a strange state of mind. It makes me think of that scene because it's really about the mutability of language and ethnicity and things like that. And it makes me think of Europa, Europa. Do you remember that movie?
No. I should, Europa, but I don't.
You need to find this movie. This is one of the great all-time movies. Europa, Europa is the amazing true story of a Jewish boy in Germany who, through an accident of Forrest Gumpian proportions, wound up basically on every side in World War II at one point or another. And at one point found himself in the Hitler Youth at a training academy to become this great shining example of Aryan soldiery. And there's a scene in this movie where the propaganda teacher comes in and is demonstrating how you recognize a Jew, right? And he calls this boy up to the front and takes little calipers and measures his head and does all these sort of things to say, see, this is the perfect Aryan
youth.
Look, this Jewish boy, of course, hiding the fact that he's Jewish, he's the perfect Aryan boy. Look at his skull. It's perfectly formed. And, there's that strange contradiction that you had during that whole period of history where Hitler, when he decided he was going to invade Russia, said, I don't have enough people to invade Russia. I need some allies. So what did he do? He declared that Croatia was populated with Aryans, when in fact the people in Croatia, the Croatians themselves, their language is completely different from German. Their ethnicity has different roots from German. They're absolutely not related to Germans, but they were made honorary Aryans with the sweep of a pen.
Well, yeah, kind of like the way the early Catholic Church made Socrates and Aristotle and Plato honorary Christians.
Exactly.
Homo Christianus, not Herolater.
Yeah, you just put it down the memory hole, so to speak. But it's got me in this Europa, Europa kind of mode of thinking, because there's that mutability of just a little damage to the brain and suddenly people are thinking, oh, she's turned into a German. It's just an interesting little story to me.
Well, I guess what, a little wink of the eye and a little... How's that hopey-changey working out for you? And you got people who were otherwise thought normal in their communities thinking that Sarah Palin's a patriot. Brain damage!
Yes, it is brain damage. And to some extent, it's also the cult. There's a cult of personality around Sarah Palin. And she's deliberate about it, too. I mean, I've got a button. I've got a button sitting on my desk, a Sarah Palin button that I picked up at the Tea Party in Huntsville. I don't know if you watched that video or not.
No, we did.
Oh, that's right. I did tell you about that. But I picked up this button, and it is a dead ringer. As soon as I saw this months ago, I said, I need this button, because it is a dead ringer for a very familiar graphic design. It's actually a Maoist design. It's this common Maoist design where you have the face slightly off-center, and you have sort of the stars on either side, little tiny stars at the edge, and sort of radiating rays of light coming out from behind the head of the person. And what they've done is they've taken this Maoist design and they've made it pink instead of red.
Pink.
Pink. Yeah, the cognitive dissonance required in order to be a Tea Partier is pretty amazing.
The tea baggers are. It is. It's a fascinating study in how to manipulate the ignorant.
Yeah.
If you look over at headonradionetwork.com, Matt, you will find that yesterday Sue put up a video that was provided to me that just captures all those bad grammar, poor spelling, teabagging signs in one short video.
I saw it. That's a fantastic video.
And whoever's responsible for it, yeah, they're, yeah, T-Bonics. In fact, it was Jude who turned me onto the video in the first place. And when you watch that, you just realize, not all home. Just not all home.
No,
but the fact that these people have been manipulated into the place where they are by very cynical, very deliberate acts by right-wing, the AstroTurf groups like FreedomWorks, it's a stroke of genius, evil genius, you
evil
know.
Evil genius, yes.
And now this, you know, today, Newt Gingrich, has been speaking a bit, you know, he's feeling rather presidential. Newt Gingrich, has created a description of the teabaggers, which is frankly more than we would be tolerated saying. Check this out.
Mm-hmm.
This is from an article.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the article says, but while attendees supported many of Gingrich's assertions, his characterization of the Tea Party as militant was lost on Springettsbury Township resident and teacher Susan Livermore and others. Reading a selection of questions to the former speaker, Manufacturers Association of South Central Pennsylvania Executive Director Mike Smeltzer asked Gingrich about the future of the conservative group. Gingrich said the movement is, quote, a natural expression of frustration with Republicans and anger at Democrats, which is, quote, more likely to end up as the militant wing of the Republican Party than as an independent or third party.
Mm-hmm.
And then Susan Livermore said, I wouldn't use the word militant. I support government getting out of my life.
Right. Yeah, they don't like the word militant, and then they show up with AK-47s. Yes, it's interesting how much cognitive dissonance there is within the Tea Party movement itself. As a matter of fact, I need to send you a link. There was a really great article from someone who actually attended the Tea Party convention in Nashville. It was in the New York Review of Books, and it was back in, when was this? It was March 25th edition, At the Tea Party by Jonathan Rabin. And what he describes here is a really not so much the monolith that you might expect. These people are not all alike. And the dividing lines that he shows between the Randians and the religious conservatives and on and on. This is where you have fractures within the movement itself. And when I say movement, you know, just assume that it's in air quotes, because, you know, we both know that the astroturfing has been a big part of it. But whether or not it was astroturf doesn't matter. It's still there. And when you study it, you find that it actually has the potential to break up. It's as vociferous. I love that word. Vociferous. Isn't that a great word?
Yes.
Yeah, it is as vociferous as, maybe even more so than the militant left of the late 60s.
In other words, it won't last long.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to last very long. As a matter of fact, the Tea Party in Huntsville last tax day 2009, was over 2,000 people. This Tea Party this year had quote-unquote hundreds. I do think that there's still going to be a countercultural movement. I don't expect the Tea Party's going to go away because it has rooted itself locally. I mean, I went to the one in Florence on tax day.
But they're going to vote religiously Republican, right?
Right. Yes, they are going to vote religiously Republican, or they could turn to a more conservative alternative. You may be familiar with the Constitutional Party.
Those are some twisted monkeys.
Those are some really twisted folks, and I do expect that you're going to have some of that third party stuff going on as well in there. But
well, you know, where it applies to Republicans, the more the merrier. Third party, fourth party, yes. Eighth party, you know, lots. Let's have lots.
Yes, divide up. Divide your forces, please. Go right ahead.
Don't mind me.
Which is why I always, when people start getting angry on the left, I say, look, this is a coalition. We succeed as a coalition. If you want to get to your progressive agenda, we're going to get your progressive agenda. But to get there, we're going to have to work as a coalition. And, you know, we can talk that way on the left. But on the right, you've got Michael Steele today admitting that the Southern strategy existed and getting called out for it all over the wingnutosphere. So yeah, I'm ready to pass the popcorn, Bob.
I can well see how you would be. My only concern, and this is a significant concern, Matt, is that these people are also, whether we like it or not, homicidal maniacs.
There is that. You have the homicidal.
They fly planes into buildings.
Again, we have an atmosphere that's contributing to this. And the Tea Party phenomenon is really a big part of that atmosphere. But I think, this is what I see. I see the paranoid age peaking after 2012. When the Mayan calendar turns out not to be, you know, some sort of apocalyptic.
Yeah, because it kind of already happened, and no, it's not going to be Zombieville in 2013. No matter how much some of us may enjoy playing Left 4 Dead, it ain't going to happen.
Yes, exactly. And you remember what happened after 2000. You had sort of all the paranoia of the 90s with Clinton and everything just sort of peaked after that. I think you can have that again in 2012.
But I think that's also because the freaks who flip over that kind of stuff took a breath of relief once they figured out that they were in the safe and loving hands of a good Christian man like Dim Leader.
We almost had
16 solid years of peace and prosperity. Thank God that's over. Hopefully George will loot something now and wreck the economy so we can feel better about ourselves while waving our flags that come from China.
Well, man, I'm going to get off your phone, but I just thought I should call and talk about all that.
I'm glad you did, because I think you should have.
Thank you. I will do it again.
All righty. Matt, take care, and you know, keep the watch fires lit. And if there's any fun to be had with Tim James, please remember me first.
I have a post up at Left in Alabama right now on that particular topic.
I don't know. Maybe it might be worth cutting our little funnin' with Tim James out for a video or something. Who knows?
Well, you know, I'm actually thinking, because you did such a terrific job on that, I was actually thinking, you know, I need to splice this in with his video. So that could happen.
That would be a beautiful thing.
That would be a beautiful thing. All right, man, I got to go.
All right, see you, Matt. Bye now.
Talk to you later.
Bye. Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent. Osborne, see, I can't speak. Only speak English on Wednesday night. Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, OsborneInc.com. And let's just keep things, we'll only stop to talk when there ain't no phone calls on the line. So we'll go to the phones right now, because we only don't take calls when there ain't no calls there to take. You understand? Yeah, that's right. Here we go. No, there we went. You got to have a little patience if you're going to call in. Got a little patience, you understand? Patience. A little program, well, not really a program note, but something to share with you. I was reminded this evening by the folks over at Democracy for America and Netroots Nation that I was asked to maybe share this with you guys. You know, yours truly, thanks to all of your help and the truth seekers over listening to Malloy, I was the number one vote getter last year in the Netroots Nation scholarship program that is sponsored by Democracy for America. As such, I was asked to maybe pass along a little information that the scholarship competition is open again. I will not be competing because I don't think that would be fair. I had my shot, and it's somebody else's turn now. So if you blog, and if you blog consistently and cogently and all of that fun stuff, I urge you to participate and compete in the democracyforamerica.com scholarship competition. Now, you can do that by going to Democracy for America, just like it sounds, DemocracyForAmerica, democracyforamerica.com/netroots, N-E-T-R-O-O-T-S, netroots, underscore, nation. democracyforamerica.com/netroots_nation. And that's where the competition and the registration are going on. By all means, jump out there and get on the bandwagon early. We're going to do everything in our power to be there, and it would be nice to have Horn-affiliated bloggers there blogging about blogging all about the proceedings. Okay? democracyforamerica.com/netroots_nation. And I'll try to put a post up on the Horn about it maybe right after the show. Let's see. Oh, I got this in. I should play this. Yeah, it's 21 minutes past the hour, and Ron sent this along. He said, you need to run this. It fits in so well with the overall tenor of the program. So let's do that. Let's do that by all means. A little playlist suggestion from Ron and Raleigh. Oh, this is going to be fun.
So goes. Why don't I just get a rose and give it to Junior? Your villager dress, our fancier dress, your loafers and those Saks Fifth Avenue clothes. We're riding through a recession. Oh, really, dear? Sorry to break it to you. But I got enough stock to survive another depression. You know why it is, people. Because I'm rich.
Rich.
White.
White.
Oh, yes, Republican all the way.
Republican.
Yes, you gotta be rich.
Rich.
White.
White.
Republican. Hear that, Chris Monell? You gotta be rich.
Rich.
You gotta be white.
White.
You gotta be Republican.
Right.
George Bush.
I know you drive a Mercedes. I know you don't drive a Lincoln. See you later, buddy. I'll be somewhere else.
Loving the sound of that guitar. And that for your delectation and for your knowledge purposes, is Root Boy Slim, who, according to Ron and Raleigh, was a frat brother, a fraternity brother, of Dim Leader back at Yale. And he became a reprobate, dissolute rocker in the 1980s. Rich, white, and Republican. What a combination. No, let's cruise along with a couple of things real quick. We all know that the Republican Party are a sick bunch of... And we probably should have had this on the air last night for prayer meeting. But as you know, especially those of you who listen to Malloy, because he spent considerable time on this the other night, that twisted evangelical freak Franklin Graham, who runs the Bunko Dodge Samaritan's Purse, was scheduled to speak at the Pentagon on the upcoming National Prayer Day. Which, why it's constitutional is kind of beyond me, but we won't worry about that right now. But Mikey Weinstein over at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation has mounted a protest against Franklin Graham getting to speak, and in fact, a military spokesman has said that the military is considering withdrawing Franklin Graham's invitation. Army Colonel Tom Collins told the Associated Press that withdrawing the invitation is on the table. After all, the Defense Department estimates that some 3,409 Muslims actually served in the U.S. military as of April 2008. And Franklin Graham, well, accommodating he ain't. And as if to underscore the objections of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, lo and behold, just like a dog returning to its vomit, Franklin Graham showed up on, of course, Fox, where he spoke to, on air, spoke with one of Fox's attack blondes, and basically confirmed everything that Mikey Weinstein had said he feared.
Good morning.
I guess this all stems back from some comments that you had after 9/11, where you said that Islam is a very evil and wicked religion. Do you still believe that, Mr. Graham?
Oh, Your Gracious, first of all, I love Muslim people, and I want Muslims everywhere to know what I know, that God loves us, that he sent his son, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I love Muslim people. Delicious with sweet taters.
Some comments that you had after 9/11, where you said that Islam is a very evil and wicked religion. Do you still believe that, Mr. Graham?
Your Gracious, first of all, I love Muslim people, and I want Muslims everywhere to know what I know, that God loves us, that he sent his son Jesus Christ into this world to take our sins, and he died for our sins and rose from the grave, and that Christ can come into their heart and change them, and they can have the hope of eternal life, salvation.
Now stop it. He says, I want them to know what I know. See, this is one of those places where they go, where, and you know, right-wingers are good at this. They go out there fooling around with the language and try to make the language be things that the language ain't. In this case, I want the Muslims to know what I know. No, Franklin, I know you're fairly well educated, so therefore we can only assume that you are openly participating in a fraud. You don't know all of what you said. You believe it. You have no empirical data whatsoever to back up a daggum thing that you said. That's all just religious doctrine and dogma. You believe it, you do not know it. Any more than a Muslim knows
that Muhammad rode a flying horse to Jerusalem. You believe it. They believe it. Neither of you know it. So let's square that away. But watch. Listen. Watching will come later.
They don't have to die in a car bomb. They don't have to die in some kind of holy war to be accepted by God. But it's through faith in Jesus Christ and Christ alone. But when you look at Islam, I love the people of Islam, but the religion, I do not agree with the religion at all. And if you look at what the religion does...
Really? Are you sure about that, Franklin? How do you feel about gambling, Franklin? Have you ever taken a position on, oh, I don't know, some state's lottery initiative? Or have you ever espoused an opinion on gambling or the fact that the legionnaires at the foot of the cross cast lots for Christ's garments and how that's proof that gambling is wrong? You ever done any of that, Franklin? Of course you have. You disagree with Islam? I wouldn't be so fast, because they don't like gambling either. How do you feel about drinking, Franklin? A little tippling here and there. You don't like that either, because you are, at your heart, a Baptist, and Baptists not only frown, but condemn drinking. How do you feel about drinking, Franklin? You don't like it, do you? Shh. Neither do the Muslims. You have more in common with them than you know. I'm just glad that you haven't figured it out yet.
Just to women alone. It is just horrid. And so, yes, I...
What? Wait, the Muslims treat women poorly, Franklin? You've actually read that thing you thump, right? Because that's got all that stuff in there about women being the source of original sin and how they're unclean and how they're supposed to keep their hair up out of the way and not talk in church and get in the way of all the smart males with all their silly woman questions. That's right there in that book you thump so much, and I'm pretty sure you've read it. But you want to get after Islam for how Islam treats women. Just checking, right?
Love the people of Islam, but the religion, I do not agree with the religion at all. And if you look at what the religion does just to women alone, it is just horrid. And so, yes, I speak out for women. I speak out for people that live under Islam, that are enslaved by Islam. And I
got a lot of nerve speaking out for somebody who hadn't asked you to speak out for them, Franklin.
I want them to know that
they're enslaved? Enslaved under Islam? A couple of billion Muslims on planet Earth. And the only thing they are a slave to is Allah. Islam means submission. And that submission is to Allah. Now, just to full disclosure on this, I don't believe in Allah any more than I believe in that big bearded juvenile delinquent of the Old Testament, or the bearded guy that is like some sort of claymation thing that splits himself into three but is still one in the New Testament. It's all bunko. It's all hokum. It's all junk. It's nothing. It is the creation of the mind of man. Whatever real spirituality is out there cannot be reached by any organized religion on the planet. Just can't. Because every religion on the planet is an atheist with regard to every other religion on the planet. It really is that simple. So by choosing one, you condemn yourself to hell in every other one. Them's some pretty long odds. And that's not just old Bob saying it. I got the real saint of common sense behind me. I got Mark Twain saying it over 100 years ago. And Jefferson saying it more than 200 years ago. But let's, you do continue there, please, talking about them people enslaved under Islam, Franklin.
at all. And if you look at what the religion does just to women, women alone, it is just horrid. And so, yes, I speak out for women. I speak out for people that live under Islam, that are enslaved by Islam, and I want them to know that they can be free through faith in Jesus Christ and Christ alone.
As long as they're donating to your little dodge, right, Franklin?
So I understand that because of your feelings about the religion of Islam, a watchdog group had a problem with you speaking at National Prayer Day at the Pentagon. So here is what one of their spokespersons said about you doing that. He said, there are two egregious issues with the Pentagon having Franklin Graham as a speaker. Graham's outrageously bigoted statements describing the entire religion of Islam as evil and wicked. So now there's this scuttle about whether or not you should actually be invited, and the Army, frankly, it's considering whether or not you should be there. Do you still want to be there, Mr. Graham?
Well, first of all, it's their decision. I was asked by the National Day of Prayer this year to be their honorary chairman, which I'm happy to do. And you know, Gretchen, I...
Let me guess. The National Day of Prayer don't have no honorary imam, does it? Does it have an honorary rabbi? Does it have an honorary Wiccan priestess? Does it have an honorary Buddhist monk? Shh. I don't think so.
His son in Afghanistan, this is his fourth tour. And I pray every...
Oh, wave the bloody shirt, Franklin. Wave the bloody shirt.
Which I'm happy to do. And you know, Gretchen, I have a son in Afghanistan. This is his fourth tour. And I pray every day for our military. I pray for not only my son, that God will put a hedge of protection around him and his men, but I pray for his...
A hedge? I'd be hoping for something more like a wall. I mean, you are talking about the universal almighty there, and a privet hedge ain't much help to stop no bullets. What you want there, Franklin, is a rock-solid 3-foot-thick wall of holy protection. Not something that you can carve up into topiaries. Just saying.
Commanding officers and our generals, that God would give them wisdom, and not only wisdom, but God would give them success over our enemies. We're in war, and we need to pray for our military. We need to pray for our president and all those in authority. That's what the...
Wait. We need to pray for our military. Let me see. Where is it? Come on. Here it is. It won't take me long. Let's pray for our military right quick. Here we go. Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth into battle, be thou near them. With them in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with their little children to wander unfriended in the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst, sports of the sun flames in summer and the icy winds of winter, broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, and who is the ever faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. Say it again, Franklin.
commanding officers and our generals, that God would give them wisdom, and not only wisdom, but God would give them success over our enemies. We're in war, and we need to pray for our military. We need to pray for our president and all those in authority. That's what the National Day of Prayer is all about. It's not about Islam versus Christianity or whatever. It's about a nation coming together and praying for its leadership, and that's what we're going to do on May 6th, National Day of Prayer,
right.
To focus this nation on praying for God to ask for His help.
Yeah. Reckoning there won't be no Muslim prayer that day, will there, Franklin? Didn't think so. You might have a token rabbi there, but you won't have no imam. Because after all, those slaves of Islam cannot be free by Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ alone. You're just sitting there salivating for the rapture when you get to put everybody to the sword. Whew. And Kim in New York City is letting me know now, hallelujah, praise, glory. The army actually did rescind the invitation. Joy. Got one right. You think that invitation would have been rescinded in the 8 long and tormented years of the dim leader administration? Hell no. Blessings of whatever sort upon Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. But you know what? Nothing slows down these maggots from the right-wing religion industry, these feasters upon human flesh, these lovers of war who claim to follow the Prince of Peace. I give you the American Family Association. Now, we've been following the American Family Association for a long time here on the Horn, because they're about as disgusting as they come. On the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing this past Monday, the American Family Association out of Tupelo, Mississippi, issued the following statement. If a radical homegrown, I'm not going to do an accent here. I'm not going to fun with this. This is serious. If a radical homegrown terrorist group attacked the United States following after the example of Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City, it would be horrible, outrageous. If Al-Qaeda managed to attack us again, killing thousands of people, the nation would be devastated, saddened, and enraged. However, with the use of that simple word, however, you know that there's going to be some vomitous material following. However, neither of these terrible events would affect the existence of America. Here it comes. Sit down. Strap in. Take your anti-emetics, put a little piece of duct tape across your mouth to cover up the screaming, especially those of you who have had to actually deal with the horrors of either Oklahoma City or the World Trade Center. Because this is not well. This is not good. This is a manifestation of evil as absolutely profound as anything that motivated anyone involved in those attacks. If Al-Qaeda managed to attack us again, killing thousands of people, the nation would be devastated, saddened, and enraged. However, neither of these terrible events would affect the existence of America. Big government, on the other hand, is set on destroying the individual on which America is built, radical anti-government groups are not taxing Americans into oblivion, running $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see, or forcing others to acquiesce to their whims on health care. However, big government is guilty. Guilty. They use the word guilty of all of the above. Where in that statement is there anything religious? Why is that protected religious speech in this country? Why is the American Family Association a gigantic multi-million-dollar tax dodge under 501c3 of the tax code? Why? Bloggers over at the American Family Association have written in the last month that federal employees can be shot because they passed health care reform. They call it, at the American Family Association, the Mussolini Care Bill. And don't think that this is just some outrageous right-wing fringe organization. During the fight over health care and insurance reform, Republican lawmakers themselves got together with the American Family Association for what the AFA billed as a prayer cast aimed at praying to their almighty, universe-creating, angry, hateful God, blood-soaked and war-loving, to keep Americans from having access to some form of admittedly less than sterling health care. Who was at the prayer cast? Well, Tony Perkins, the president of Family Research Council Action, was there. Marjorie Dannenfelser, the president of the Susan B. Anthony List, was there. So was Brian Fisher of the American Family Association. So was Tom McCluskey, senior vice president of Family Research Council Action. So was Kristen Hawkins, executive director of Students for Life. And so, too, were Representative Mike Pence, high-ranking member of the Republican Party in the House. So was Representative Tom Price, M.D., Republican of Georgia. And so also was Representative Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman, Republican of Minnesota. Yes. The American Family Association has said that being able to go to the doctor when you're sick is worse than being attacked in Oklahoma City or the Al-Qaeda attacks on Washington and New York City. I wish to God they had the courage to say that to someone who worked in the toxic smoking rubble of the World Trade Centers. I wish they had the nerve, but they don't. They are cowards who hide behind their millions, and they are sickening. They are disgusting, and they are as great a threat as this republic faces today. And at the risk of driving, of just ending this whole evening on a downer, but it's kind of got to happen. News coming out of the Coal River Valley of West Virginia via the Washington Independent. Massey Energy Massey Energy has overtly prevented miners whose friends and relatives and colleagues were killed at Upper Big Branch from attending funerals for those victims. Among other things, they have forbidden the placement of wreaths or memorial markers. In one case, they required a worker to go on shift, even though the fate of one of his relatives, one of the people who would become one of the victims of the April 5th horror, remained unknown at the time. Remember that memo that Don Blankenship wrote, "Work like you mean it." An anonymous wife of one Massey miner told Mike Lillis of the Washington Independent, "I told my husband, you got a job to do and you're going to do it." And that he could not go to the funeral of his friend and brother miner. They are circling the wagons at Massey Energy. The Massey board, the board of directors, has recently issued a statement earlier today. "The Massey Energy family continues to grieve for those lost in the awful tragedy at Upper Big Branch and remains fully committed to the safety of our members. During times like these, a change in senior management is not appropriate or in the best interest of our members and shareholders. Therefore, we want to emphasize that Don Blankenship has the full support and confidence of the Massey Energy Board of Directors." That statement was made by Admiral retired Bobby R. Inman, the lead independent director. Who's Bobby Inman? Well, I'll tell you in a minute. He was interviewed for a story in the Austin American Statesman down in Austin, Texas. He is a professor, you see, in national security at the University of Texas. No, really. And he doesn't take too kindly to the fact that news media have actually tried to tepidly do their job and report on this corporate horror that leeches off of the well-being of an entire region in the United States, otherwise known as Massey Energy. Inman said to the Austin American Statesman, "My anger level is pretty high for the disinformation pushed by unions. I'm a political independent, but this is enough to make a tea partier out of me." Really? He said that. Because, see, there weren't really 29 deaths at Upper Big Branch. It's all just a union thing. Who's Bobby Ray Inman? Bobby Ray Inman was born 1931, according to his Wikipedia biography. From September 1974 to July 1976, he served as Director of Naval Intelligence. Then he was promoted to the Defense Intelligence Agency, where he was Vice Director till 1977. Then he was Director of the National Security Agency until 1981. His last major position was as the Deputy Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was there from February 12, 1981 to June 10, 1982. He is one sick bastard. He's also served as chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And since then, he's been out, been investing in startup technology companies. Managing director of Geffner Ventures and Limestone Ventures. Member, the lead independent director of the board of directors of Massey Energy. And of several privately held companies, reports Wikipedia. He serves as a trustee of the American Assembly, whatever that is. He serves as a trustee of the California Institute of Technology. Ever since 2001, he has held the LBJ Centennial Chair in National Policy at the University of Texas at Austin's Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. He's also been the interim dean there. He's been on the board of directors of the Council of Foreign Relations. He's been on the board of Dell Computer, SBC Corporation, otherwise known as AT&T now, and as mentioned, Massey Energy. He is a wicked, soulless man who can't think past profitability. What a pity that the activist students of the University of Texas don't know that this human cancer is being fostered inside the walls of that otherwise respectable academic institution. There should be pickets. There should be protests. There should be outright demands for the resignation either from the board of Massey or from his chair at the University of Texas. One or the other. You cannot serve two masters. Because right now, retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman is defending Massey Energy's role in the homicides of 29 human beings. The Austin American-Statesman did respond with an editorial excerpted by Ken Ward over at Cold Tattoo Blog. The Austin American-Statesman writing, "The Massey mine that blew up April 5th was facing more than $150,000 in fines for safety violations stemming from more than 100 citations. Inman told the Statesman's Asher Price that it is unions unhappy about Massey's non-union mines that have stirred up trouble for the company. The board, he said, is not culpable." Of course not. Blankenship, according to Inman, quote, "is without a question the best coal miner in the business." Jesus, to call Don Blankenship a coal miner is to insult every human being that's ever gone under the earth, alive or dead for the last 125 years. That endorsement came despite the 2007 resignations of two Massey board members uncomfortable about Blankenship's poor risk management and the firm's confrontational handling of regulatory matters. Those resignations came a year after a Massey mine explosion that killed two workers. The firm later paid $4.2 million in civil and criminal penalties as a result of that incident. In 2008, Massey paid a $20 million settlement in response to Environmental Protection Agency allegations of thousands of Clean Water Act violations. Charles Elson, a corporate governance expert at the University of Delaware, told the Statesman that boards like the one at Massey have, quote, "the responsibility to oversee the stewardship of the environmental and safety compliance program." In other words, Bobby Ray Inman is in a position where the only thing he can do is sink or swim with Don Blankenship. I don't have time to look it up real quick. I will after the show, but Ron and Raleigh noting, if you want to read something weird, Google Bobby Inman and UFO. Ron saying only, "Strange days, Bob." Indeed. So thanks for joining me for a wonderful show this evening, I think. I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. Thank you to the two people who have contributed in the last 3 days to help keep us afloat. We are only $775 now from reaching our monthly fundraising goal here at the Horn, and it is sorely needed. Bills to pay. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and there's a snail mail address there as well. Thanks to everybody for joining in with your ideas, your thoughts, your phone calls, your participation in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. You know, there are message boards out there at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com that you can use, too. The busier the site becomes, the more we build the audience. Participate, folks. Thanks to Lottie and Sue. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, who has a post up on how to listen to the Horn as you drive around town. Go find it. It uses an iPhone app. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. I believe that link will also go up on the Bob Kincaid link at whiterosesociety.org for those of you who have iPhones. Thanks to my writer, my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thank you to Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
A minute past the hour, and we begin this Thursday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sometimes I wonder why I say that. It's not like you guys don't know, but you never know when there's going to be a noob out there just finding us for the first time, and we say that with great love in our hearts because we were all noobs once upon a time, weren't we? I'm a noob, as you're a noob, as we're a noob, and we are noobs together. You know, Hootie Weed or Cuckoo Cachoo or whatever. It is Thursday, and I'm happy to say it's Thursday because Thursday always means that we get a new edition. The Green News Report from our dear friends, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And this should be a dandy insofar as it's Earth Day. And Earth Day, it's not just Earth Day. It's the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. That's right. Earth Day began in 1970. Yes, yes, yes. I remember it well. You know, this may just sound crazy, but I do. I remember Earth Day well because I was all of 7 years old, and I had a brand new, I was in first grade, I had a shiny new purple bicycle. Oh, that thing was the joy of my existence. It had a banana seat that was all sparkly, and I mean, this thing was purple. Everything on it was purple. Purple was my favorite color. Still is in many ways. And it was a beautiful, beautiful spring morning in northwest Alabama. The elementary school was three and a half blocks away. And I got to ride the bicycle to school that day. And it was a simpler time. It was a sweeter time. It was a more trusting time. And I parked my bicycle in the bicycle rack there. Schools had bicycle racks. Because it was in a neighborhood. Parked my bicycle and went to class. That would have been Mrs. Landers, first grade. Yeah. And it got stolen. My beloved bicycle was stolen on the very first Earth Day in American history. And so that's how I remember Earth Day. Oh, such a prosaic existence. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But anyway, it's the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, and I look for a great green news report out of Brad and Desi. They do not disappoint. Never have mailed one in yet. Some of the snarkiest enviro snark that there is available on the series of tubes where, you know, you push the button here and it just goes there. It doesn't go just there? No. Well, where does it go? You mean you push the button and it doesn't go there? Our vaunted Supreme Court. I've got a Supreme Court story in the stack tonight. Or kind of a, not really a Supreme Court story, but one of those law of unintended consequences stories arising from the story we talked about the other night with the First Amendment being protected by Roberts and Thomas and Scalia and Kennedy and Ginsburg and Breyer and Stevens. Did I miss any? It was 8-1. I got a story about that in the stacks, and, well, we're going to get to it. There's a hint. But as I noted in the show post for this evening, I have to tell you, it's a little frustrating sometimes trying to pull this show together, especially now that we've compartmentalized things and we have certain things that happen on certain days. You know, Friday on the front porch, which will happen tomorrow, is kind of laid back and fun, and we save silly stuff for it unless you're burned up and I'm burned up, and then it's not so silly. We save Wednesdays for prayer meeting when we have nice religious lunacy stories to share. And fast becoming one of the most popular evenings of the week is Moran Monday. We have given the right wing an entire evening in which to display for all and sundry just what a stupid bunch of jackasses they are. The whole night, nothing but right-wing jackasses, and it's all theirs. Is that good enough for them? Oh, hell no! Let's see, what did Mike Vander Booger Eater say the other day? When the Southerner says, oh, hell no, that means somebody's going to get shot or stabbed. Well, I just said, oh, hell no, and not, trust me, I'm not stabbing or shooting anybody, so it'll be okay. But no, we give them their, and still, the morons just keep piling up. But it's like junk mail. It's like spam, and you've got no filter, and it just comes at you, comes at you, comes at you, comes at you. And tonight is no different. Tonight, well, I got to tell you, when I was first made aware of this clip, this video, And I saw the name Sue Loudon, even though Garrett, calling from Vegas, had mentioned her on a number of occasions. You know, there's been kind of a Betty White renaissance in this country of late, what with the Snickers commercial and a few years back with Lake Placid, which was just a delight. And Betty White is a comic genius. On a par, I would say, any day of the week, Betty White is a comic genius every bit as much as Gracie Allen. You know, George Burns' beloved wife was, and comedy partner, was a genius.